Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audiblepodcast.com/Owen Benjamin. That's my name. And I highly suggest you do it because I literally listen to a book a week and it's the only reason I'm smart.
Why didn't they laugh?
You suck!
That's not funny.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? I'm your host, Owen Benjamin, where I analyze why things work and do not work on stage. Today, I do not have a guest. I'm here with myself, old school, like my first four or five episodes, where I tackle one very specific thing. Because something very interesting has happened in my set, and I want to share it with you. I've been doing stand-up now for over a decade, and over time, your heart rate slows down on stage where you don't really get nervous, and you're allowed to be yourself. A lot of people will say, oh, this comic has finally found their voice. And really what it is, in my opinion, they can just be their voice. Like they were always that voice, but they're just not scared anymore. I've talked about this in other podcasts, but something interesting has happened to me where I got scared again. I got scared. And I've had enough experience where I could detach and almost enjoy the fear. Almost like enjoying the butterflies in your stomach when you meet a new girl or someone you care about. You know, you're like, oh, wow, I feel giddy again. Like, that's cool. Versus when it was actually scary back in the day. I had to learn a new Beethoven song. I saw this dude on YouTube, this Asian dude, play Beethoven's Fifth, which is written for a symphony on a piano. And it just blew my mind. I was like, I couldn't even imagine that being played on a piano because it's played by like 100 instruments. So I spent this last month learning it off the YouTube clip. So I recorded myself just playing it alone. So I'll show you what it sounds like. So that's usually like bump. It's usually strings. All right, so you get the idea. So it's very new to me, but when I'm alone, I can play it fine now. I probably played it 1,000 times this month, like literally 1,000 times. I think my neighbors hate me. And so I thought of this idea. I thought of doing because I need a new closer. I've been doing this one closer for a little while, so I'm auditioning some new closers for myself. And traffic to me is always funny and it's universal. And I heard that song and I couldn't help but picture a dramatic situation between two cars. You know, because everybody fights little wars and battles every day. And the more benign, the funnier when you have a song that intense. So I work on it. And I feel like I can play it fine. I've rehearsed it all week. And then I go to the improv and I sit down at the piano and I go blank. I have an audio of it and you can't hear the crowd in this audio because it's just going through the microphone. But you have to understand, I haven't felt this way in a long time I know so many people that are so much funnier than me. I mean, way funnier. A lot of times I'm off-putting. Like in a group, I'm not getting the biggest laughs socially. But on stage, you know, I crush. And because it's a different skill, it's like because you're trained at like that level of intensity where the funny person can go on stage and lose all their personality out of fear. And because I don't have that fear, I can be a very good comedian and not the funniest person at all. It's kind of interesting. So I go up there, and because this song isn't committed to muscle memory yet, I felt nervous. I didn't think I could play it properly. I had doubt. And that manifested into a full-blown shutdown. So let's take a listen to that.
My blinker's on. Please let me in. I don't even remember how the fuck the song goes. I'm spacing. I literally don't remember. I played it 1,000 times. Hang on. Oh, yeah, I got it. My lane ends in 500 feet. I will be fine. He doesn't budge, but that's okay. I still have time. Hang on. 300 feet. Just let me fit. 100 feet, you piece of shit. Thank you. Now I am pissed. I start to go. I hope you know I'm loco. I will not stop. I start to sweat. My windows down. My fingers up. I see no cops. Hang on. What's the next part? It goes, I got more. It goes, I'll bump your car. Nothing to lose. No. Is that it? Yeah. I'll bump your car. Nothing to lose. You drive up Benz. It's brand new. My car's got no resale value. You back down. Bitch ass, now you are in my rear view. I crank my tunes.
All right. So you got an idea of that. Like, there's definitely potential there, but the fear got me. I mean, like, the beginning is one of the easiest parts. It's da-na-na-na, da-na-na-na. Like, I could teach an 8-year-old how to play that part. And I was thinking ahead so far, and I could feel the breath of the crowd on me. You know, they were right there, intimate. And usually I get off on that. It escalates my show. But not when you have a chink in your armor. Then the waters flood in. And it's interesting just to hear that, where I'm like, how does it go? Like, I'm not talking to anyone. I'm talking to myself. I'm like Gollum. I'm like, I wants it, but I don't have it. So then I start playing it. I'm like, okay, I got the flow, and then gone again. And you'll see that with comics starting out, you know, just you almost have to train yourself to be okay in that moment of loss. Because listening to myself 10 years ago, I would have possibly like ran off stage, because restarting it, it only gets worse. It only compiles and compiles and compiles till you're like questioning everything and having a complete meltdown. And I think I like sharing these moments with you guys because it's so applicable to anyone's life. This is just one example. It's applicable to relationships with your significant others, with your kids, with your parents, with your friends, your neighbors, where things can build up that don't need to be there. Like, it's just, it's you're projecting it yourself. And I love when I get to see myself do it, because I'm in a profession where I can record myself very easily and then analyze it. Because, you know, when you're like a lot of people at work, you know, if you're at office 8-9 hours, you don't really have much motivation to record the audio of it and then later review it. If I'm doing a 45-minute set, I can listen to it later and then be like, boy, did I misread that. You know, if you go back in my podcasts and listen to An Act of War, that section, I mean, the audio isn't as good because I wasn't at Sideshow Network yet, and they have legit mics and great sound engineers and stuff. So, you know, there's a little bit of a hiss, and it kind of takes you out of the moment. But you get to see how I just misread a situation to the point where I almost fought a guy, and it turned out he was French and couldn't speak English. And then later in the week, in my head, I still had gotten in an argument with a French guy when, in fact, he just wasn't saying anything. And I perceived his tight pants and sunglasses as a threat for some reason, because it was culturally different. But this is the thing. This is why I recommend the Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers, that whole 10,000 hours thing, because it's all just repetition. It's so easy for people to say, oh, you're talented at performing. It's like, no, you keep doing it, almost like you have Asperger syndrome. I highly recommend you guys read Malcolm Gladwell's books, specifically Outliers and Blink. Blink is very applicable to this podcast because there's whole chapters on, it's basically how human perception sometimes is so distorted in very short periods of time, blank. And the fear response, you know, we're talking about how an elevated heart rate or nerves or anxiety can limit your ability of perceiving the outside world, or in my case, playing the piano, as you can see. He goes step by step through police officers and how, you know, these shootings sometimes can be because of a lack of training at elevated heart rate. Just a little taste of the kind of information you're going to learn in Outlayers. Have you ever thought to yourself, why is this person more successful than me? Or why is this group of people doing better than this group of people? A lot of times the factors will surprise you. For example, Koreans had a really hard time flying airplanes. Not because they're bad drivers, because they have a hard time with authority. Not following authority too much. They did studies where the co-pilot would never tell the captain when there was a problem because it is against Korean culture. And they literally kept crashing into mountains. Like, a ton. Canadian hockey players. Most of the great ones are all born in the same month. Find out why by Malcolm Gladwell in Outlayers. And definitely read Blink. It's you will at times be surprised at how just damaged and flawed your brain is. And why it got that way. And I suggest you do the audiobook because he reads it himself and he has a very gentle voice and you can't figure out where his accent is from because he's a Canadian with a British father and a Jamaican mother. So he sounds like a Martian and it's very enjoyable. So it's audiblepodcast.com/Owen Benjamin to get a free audiobook. And it's one of those subscriptions where once a month, you're kind of expected to get another book. And I'll tell you right now, you'll probably get more than one a month. So it actually is a good reminder. And they give you credits and stuff. Some books are like $7, which is one beer. And one beer will do nothing to you unless you're 9 or tiny or you haven't eaten in 5 days. So audiblepodcast.com/Owen Benjamin. All right, guys, the wait is over. Baseball season is here at last. Take me out to the ball game. And the excitement continues all season long at DraftKings.com, the official daily fantasy partner of the Major League Baseball. I love Major League Baseball, MLB. They're really nice people. Great handshakes. Daily fantasy means no season-long commitments, just instant cash, instant gratification. Why wait until the end of the season to claim victory when you can win huge cash every day? It's actually a good point. That's one of the reasons I don't love fantasy is because of how long it takes. That's cool. Short term. I like that. DraftKings, it's like a brand new season every time you play. Just select 2 pitchers and 8 position players, stay under the salary cap, and you could be on your way to an enormous payday. Last year, Peter from Colorado won $1 million at DraftKings in one day just playing fantasy baseball. And guess what? I'm now going to try and find Peter from Colorado and see if he wants to invest in one of my harebrained schemes because $1 million is a ton. Hundreds of thousands of fantasy sports fans just like you have already cashed in at DraftKings. Now it's your turn. Hurry to DraftKings.com now and enter promo code LAUGH to play for free. You could win part of the $300 million in prizes being awarded this season. Use promo code LAUGH, L-A-U-G-H, for free entry now at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com, that's DraftKings.com. Like that, what you just heard is not talented at performing. That was garbage. I could do a skill, and I froze like a fucking deer and panicked because I overthought what could happen and I spiraled. And that can happen at any time. So even if you have a ton of experience at performance, I haven't tried to challenge myself with piano in a long time. I will play songs that I've played since I was 9, so my fingers know where to go, even in the dark, or I play just ambient chords. It's not hard. I can do it hammered. Even there, no alcohol at all. I'm not even drinking one beer on stage because I needed to stay so sober to remember these notes. And okay, so this is just 1 week later. Here's another example with the full story of it. And it's not that I can play it better now. It's only been a week since the clip before, but just from being on stage a few times, I've now trained myself to be okay playing that with an elevated heart rate. All right, check this out.
My blinker's on. Please let me merge. My lane ends in 500 feet. I will be fine. He doesn't budge, but that's okay. I still have time. 300 feet. Just let me fit. 100 feet, you piece of shit. Now I am mad. I start to go, I hope you know I'm loco, I will not stop. My window's down, my fingers up, I start to sweat, I see no cops. I'll bump your car, nothing to lose. You drive a Benz, it's brand new. My car's got no resale value. You back down now, your bitch ass is in my rear view. I crank my tunes. Dark Side of the Moon. I quickly turn off my tunes. Now we're at the same red light, and he's yelling that he wants to fight.
Yes. I don't remember this part.
I pretend that I don't hear him. I just focus on my Slim Jim. How long is this stoplight? The tension mounts. I want to bounce. He looks real mean, but finally the light is green. My fingers up, I say you suck and drive real fast because I got easy pass. I'm now in such a good mood, I get some food before my job interview. It turns out my interview is with the
All right, so you see I'm still working at it, because once that ball starts rolling, when I'm good, because that's significantly better than the other clip you heard, but you still saw it chinks a little bit where it's like, hang on. You know, I'm not playing it as fast as the Asian dude in the YouTube clip. You got to see this dude. He's insane. But it's I can't play it that fast because I have to give room for laughs and room for people to conceptualize the jokes. Because if I steamroll too hard, it's just a blur. So, but I'm still not there yet. There's still moments where I'm faltering slightly, but it's getting there. And then this is all this week, by the way. All this stuff is just this week. And this is another thought I had. I just did this three nights ago. I want to do the whole story where you're at a red light and then the guy's next to you at the red light. Because I found that, you know, whenever you road rage and then you get stuck next to the person at the red light, things change where your rage goes down and you feel vulnerable. And then you like pretend you don't see the person. And then when it turns green, you throw them the bird and you fly, you hit the gas again. Because it's easier to, you know, you can yell at a car a lot easier than a person. So then, you know, I hit the gas, I drive fast, my ego explodes, I'm Icarus flying towards the sun, I get food, maybe I shine my shoes, and then I go to the job interview and it's the same guy and I'm screwed. I like that drama of it because it's so dumb and absurd, but yet so relatable to everyone, and the music gives it such a high drama. But this is another option I'm debating.
My blinker's on. Please let me merge. My lane ends in 500 feet. I have some time. He doesn't budge, but that's okay. I will be fine. 300 feet. Just let me get 100 feet, you piece of shit. Now I am mad. I start to go. I hope you know I will go. I will not stop. It's like, my window's down, my fingers up, I'm fucking pissed, I see no cops. I'll bump your car, nothing to lose. You drive a Benz, it's brand new, my car's got no resale value. You back down now, your bitch ass is in my rear
So that's an option where I just win, where it's just the underdog, because it's funny that whoever has the worst car, whoever has the shittiest car is actually in control on the street because they don't have anything to lose. I used to drive a Plymouth Acclaim with an orange fender, 1991. And this is not in the 90s. This is deep into the 2000s. So when I finally donated it to the Kidney Foundation, when I finally could afford another car, and they weren't excited to get it. I've never seen anyone be not excited to get a car. It was the opposite of Oprah. And the thing I always remembered is I would barely need a blinker changing lanes. I would just go, and everyone would let me in because they assumed I didn't have car insurance. It's like the person with the tattoo on their face is scary because they've already established that they don't give a shit. Like, I've seen, like, I'm 6'7", 230, and I've seen dudes that are 120 pounds with teardrop tattoos, and I would not fight them. I'm physically twice their size, and they're like, they look physically weak and methy and very, very, very easy to dominate physically. And I would, if they were like, what are you looking at? I'd be like, nothing, sir. Do you need anything? Do you want me to go to the grocery store? Because they've established that they have nothing to lose, and I do. So I would not want to go down that road. It's the same on the street. So it's like, you drive a Benz, it's brand new, my car's got no resale value, you back down, now your bitch ass is in my rear view. It's an underdog story. It's like Rocky, you know? And I could end it there. But, you know, it's a debate. So this is something where you guys can comment on this or on my Twitter, at Owen Benjamin, Facebook, Owen Benjamin Comedy. Let me know what you think, because I like knowing what other people think. I rely a lot on it. Sometimes on the road, comics will be like, yo, I got a tag for you. Is it cool if I tell you? I'm like, yes. There's so many comics. Apparently, I don't know this, because my comedian friends are insanely cool and just genuine and smart and giving. There's so many comedians that are like, bro, I got it. I got the joke. There's like this weird pride in it where it's like, no, any perspectives are a comedian's food. Like, you give me your perspective, the more different than me you are, the more I need it. And if you tell me something that, like, I have a closer right now, Over the Pants Hand Job in a Walgreens, OTPHJ, where I play it to Coldplay. It's this long love story. Walgreens was Roy Wood Jr.'s idea. And that's one of the funniest parts of the whole song. I was doing Over the Pants Hand Job to Coldplay. And one night, that's what I miss about Sullivan and Son. It's not even the show necessarily, or the consistent work, or being on television. Those are cool. I get it. What I miss is the comedy camaraderie where Ahmed Ahmed, Steve Byrne, myself, and Roy Wood Jr., we worked our ass off. And then after we were done shooting, we toured the country to promote the show, making, literally breaking even at times, losing money, just to make sure people watch what we created, because half of it is, you know, you can make anything you want, and if people don't listen to it or watch it, your idea just kind of sits there. I listen to Brian Callen's podcast a lot. Fighter and the Kid's good, but his older one is one of my favorite podcasts out there, because him and this dude Hunter will go through books. And Brian's this very masculine, very alpha male guy, and one of the most well-read, smart human beings you'll ever meet. And one of the concepts they always talk about is all these great ideas locked in books. Like, they're locked in there. No one can appreciate them because a lot of people don't read. I am pimping the fuck out of audible.com this podcast, but it's for a reason. It's like, that's a way to get the shit out of these books. I don't like reading that much because I blame my bad eyesight because my parents are college professors and I read so much as a kid that, like, so much that I feel like that's why I need glasses. And reading, you have to, like, sit. I have a reading nook, which is cool. I still do read because I like to read out loud because it helps with acting. Because Dan Loria, the dad from Wonder Years, who was the dad on Sullivan and Son, would always tell us that our voice is our instrument. You know, it's our tool. So he would just read the paper. And that's how he would keep his, you know, being able to enunciate words. You can even hear on this podcast, if I were doing this as a script, I wouldn't be saying, you know, and they're crutches. So the more you read read pages out loud, the more you can talk without these crutches. I still need to do that a lot. But when you're listening to books, I run all the time. I run between 8 and 12 miles every single day without question. It's my sanity. I don't go to a therapist because my therapy is physical. I had a trainer 4 years ago. I got fat. I was over 300 pounds. You know, their lifestyle can get rough when you're just on the road and it's just Quiznos and booze. And I hooked up with this guy, Kevin Lilly, who's a trainer. He now has his own gym. It's called Heart and Hustle on Beverly. He's one of the most inspirational people I know. He showed me that sometimes it's not even gender-based. I was going to write a joke about it, how men need, you know, to move and work and have a backpack on like we're Sheltie dogs. And it's not men, it's humans. Sometimes comedians make the mistake of genderizing things that are all genders. There's communication things that are for sure gender, and I exploit the hell out of them in stand-up, but all humans, our church is our body. It's like, and it's not about vanity. I used to want a great body. I used to want a six-pack. And in that time, I was fat. I was really fat because life doesn't reward that. When I wanted to be like, I want to be sane. I want to be healthy. I want to live longer for my family and people that love me. That's when you just become in great shape. I eat ice cream. I eat pizza. I drink. I'm an excessive person and I'm like lean. And it's because you recognize that when you move, you disappear a little bit, and that takes away all your anxiety. When you overthink, when you're in your car, thinking about your credit card bills and whether or not the industry you're in is going to stay, and what are you going to be in 5 years, and you know, does anyone really love you? We die alone. Your dog's your best friend. Every year, 7 years to them. Life can get intense. So I found this because of my mom and Kevin Lilly, that it's the simple shit to get you out of those zones. And a lot of people describe me as very happy and very, you know, happy. Like I typically am smiling or excited or high-fiving. And like when I drink, I get even happier, which means I'm a closet happy person because people usually become more what they are when they're drunk. And so apparently I have an even happier person inside of me. But I've been dark. I've gone down roads that are dark. And I found the key to getting out of that is movement and hydration. I didn't drink enough water for about 10 years. Juice isn't water. Water, like 150 ounces a day. I have a Camel Pack. Just pound water. All the moisturizers and shit you put on your skin does nothing compared to water. If you drink enough water, your skin is like a baby's ass. It's like a baby's baby ass. And then, of course, movement. It doesn't have to be intense movement. You can dance in your home, just dance around, jump up and down. I used to live in the Czech Republic in the late 90s, and they didn't have gyms because why the hell would they have gyms? They had just gotten out of the communist regime. Life was a gym. They had to, like, move giant rocks, first for Hitler, then for Stalin, then Khrushchev, and Gorbachev was like, all right, everyone, calm down with the rocks. So to pay to move weights didn't really register to them. I remember I would go into stores and there would be no help. Like salespeople were like, buy what you want. And then I realized that they lived for so long without the drive, any drive. Like they would get the same amount of bread, whether or not they sold a pair of jeans or not. So they would just be like, why are you pushy? It's like, because there's no end to the shit. You know, push. But anyway, I would just jump up and down in my room. It's key. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. I got to wind this down. But a point I wanted to make with this Beethoven thing, I know I talk a lot about police brutality. And I'll tell you why, because I know cops that are really good people. Tons of them. I also know complete asshole moron cops. Tons of those as well. And I feel that I love human nature. I love people. And I feel like I can see in people with their micro expressions and stuff, what they're feeling. And I've seen some of these cops that have murdered innocent people on television looking as if, I don't know if you know that feeling when you've been super hammered and you wake up the next morning and you're like, what the hell did I do? And someone's like, you drew marker all over my walls. And you're like, I wouldn't do that. And then you realize it's because of the booze physically messes with your brain so that you become an animal. This is what a lot of people don't understand about cops. When you think of cops, you just picture someone with power inflicting power on other people. We've all had issues with bullies. I hate bullies. I was fucked with by teachers and principals my whole life and bullies. I was a chubby kid with an opera singing father and one friend, and I was weird, and I asked way too many questions, and I was repetitive with piano. I was annihilated by bullies. So I can't stand bullies, and I don't think cops are necessarily the bullies that people think they are. I think that it's a systemic problem where they're now, for whatever reason, they're on the outside of any community. And a lot of black people think, black people have it way worse because black communities are fucked with way, way worse. But you have to understand white people feel the same way. It's just, we just don't have the same threat. It's not the same threat level. But when you see a cop, you immediately think, what have I done wrong? Like, and you're doing nothing wrong. Zero. You're driving sober at 3 p.m. You're driving the speed limit. You're not on your phone. You see a cop, first thing I do, I don't know about you guys, but I look to see if they pull a U-turn to follow me and pull me over. I'm always feeling guilty when I see a cop. And some people would be like, well, what did you do then? It's like, nothing. They always treat me like an outsider. That's what they do to everybody. So that us against them mentality. Oh, was that in Influence? What book was that? Was it Influence or was it? I got to bring up a point. After desegregation, it could have been in the book Influence. It could have been in Give and Take. I'm not exactly sure. But the thing they realized is that when they added a new race or culture to a group, it didn't make them get along more. It actually made them get along less because they're in direct competition with each other. So when they felt less in common with a group, it would fragment and they would hate each other even more. So they've done studies with kids. It's not even racial boundaries. They've done it at summer camps where they'll separate groups and then make them fight for for grades or, you know, tug of war, whatever. And it would get hostile, tribal, crazy. Then when they would give them mutual goals where they're like, if you guys all come up with the answer in an hour, we can all have ice cream. And, you know, it wasn't immediate, but within a month, all the tribalism was gone. That a lot of hate and anger comes from systemic problems where it's the us against them mentality. We're very competitive animals. We're monkeys. Okay. So when the cops are on the outside, it's already set to fail. And then the Beethoven thing, this is when it gets really interesting. These dudes, these men and women are fucking scared a lot of times. It's really easy to think, oh, they have a gun, they have a car. Many, many, many times a cop is walking in a situation of unknown. I've had guns drawn on me before. I was falsely identified as someone who just committed a crime because of, I think it was my height. So black people, you can take it easy. That's happened to me twice where they thought I was someone who just committed a crime. I'm very white. But it was like tall, white, Caucasian man in jeans and hoodie or whatever, just blah, blah. So spotlight from a fucking helicopter on me, spotlight, guns drawn, you know, get on the ground, hands behind your head, handcuffed, put in the back of a cop car. Then they let me go immediately. They're like, all good. They started watching, they downloaded my like a special or something. They're like, oh, okay, we'll check you out on Comedy Central. I was like, thanks guys. But this is what you got to understand. I know I'm not a threat to them. I don't have a gun. I don't have a knife. I was probably listening to Kesha on my headphones. Well, not Kesha, but something of equal absurdity. But to them, I could be a threat. I could be someone who's about to kill them. So they perceive me as a threat. Like, and when you read Gladwell and when you listen to me play Beethoven, you realize that the world becomes much, much different and during arousal. And I don't mean sexual arousal. It's when your heart rate elevates. When your heart rate goes up past 140, you start perceiving threats that don't exist. You start thinking people have guns when they don't. A movement is something it isn't. And the problem with the police, and I know a lot of military who don't have this problem, special forces people, because they're trained during stress. I think that police training, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure cops will be like, no, we go through crazy shit at the academy. I don't think you do. I think that you're trained, you know, this is protocol, this is what you do in this situation. But no one is like clapping in your ear while you do it. No one is saying you're about to die. No one puts you in a trunk and puts a bag over your head. Because at that point, can you still remember protocol? And the answer tragically is no. And that's why a lot of these people are getting shot by good cops. And of course, there's evil cops. Sometimes on the news, you'll see someone, you're like, you're fucking Serpico. You know, you unloaded into a dead person's body. Like, you are a sociopath. But I think that it is much less common than people think. And I think that that level of military training, where you have former military, former special ops that become cops, they draw when they see a gun. They shoot when they have a threat to their life. And that's about it. And they have a steady hand. And I think that it's your level of categorization increases so much when you're scared. I could play that song normal, and as soon as my heart rate went up, it was gone. All my humanity gone. I was nothing. I was just a scared piece of shit staring into a black fucking room. And I want you guys to all keep that in mind, both when you're looking at news stories as well as situations in your own life. Assume people are good. Don't be paranoid. Be pronoid. Have a conspiracy theory that people behind the scenes are scheming for your happiness and for your success. Because the more you think like that, the happier you will be. Paranoia is not going to help. If you see an unarmed person got shot, or if you, you know, I'm trying to think of an example, because that you should think something went wrong in that situation. You know, you should. But don't just assume that people are evil. Evil is hard. It's tough to get evil. I'll give you an example. Adolf Hitler was evil. To get that evil, he was in trench warfare for 4 years, watching his friends die. And in no man's land, the bodies would sit there and rot, because if you went up there, you died. And they would watch people they knew rot. Okay, they experienced shells falling from the sky. And the previous major war was like a Prussian war where people wore feathers on their hats. They had PTSD that was so bad that like Adolf Hitler lost his sight for a while from anxiety. And bear in mind, this isn't your grandfather who fought in World War II. This is a guy who was homeless at 31. When people say he was a homeless artist, I always assumed he was 15 or 16 going through a weird time. I talked to Greg Fitzsimmons last night, who, by the way, is one of the reasons I got into comedy and one of the smartest people I've ever heard speak. And he has a podcast, so for sure check that out. He was the one who told me that fact. And I majored in history, minored in Holocaust, World War II stuff in college and human evolution and shit like that. And I never even knew that. I had no idea that he was a homeless vagabond at 31. Okay, at that point, your record's kind of pressed. When I hear someone's homeless at 19, 21, even 25, I'm like, oh, hopefully they turn it around. 31, it means society has rejected you. Like, you have problems, you're antisocial, people can smell it on you. You know, one of the problems with homelessness in this country especially is it comes from mental illness, which is sad as hell. Sometimes people look at homeless people and think, oh, lazy. No, they're not lazy. They can't fit into society. There's some reason why they can't pay bills, or they can't. So a lot of them are bipolar. So I really hope that there's treatment programs for them, because there's a lot of good people on the streets that just can't function in society. Okay, so you already have Adolf Hitler is that guy. Then you put him through 4 years of World War One. Then after World War One, the peace treaty annihilates Germany, takes away all their resources, takes away their army, takes away all their pride. Thinkers at the time were even saying, we're just delaying another war. The war is coming. This isn't a peace accord. This is just halftime, basically. And so you put that all together, you get a monster. And that guy was a monster. Same with Stalin. This podcast isn't about monsters, but so I'm not going to keep getting into this, but monsters aren't born, they're created, and they're created, it's like a diamond. It has to be heat, pressure, you know, constant abuse, constant. There's people that are inclined towards violent rage. There's that warrior gene or all that stuff. Or they, there's a genetic component where you're more likely to eat sweets or more likely to kill someone. But that has to be encouraged by crazy shit. So keep that in mind. And just bear in mind that you got to walk a mile in someone else's shoes and understand what fear is. And stand-up comics understand what fear is. I'm not a courageous person. I've been to the Middle East. I'm friends with the military. I could not do what they do. I could not put my life on the line for my country unless, I don't know, maybe I could. Maybe if I was tested, I could. But to see that, I'm like, that's courage, right? But I am a fear junkie, and I've gotten through it on a special ops level. Public speech is the number one fear in the world, above death. So I have an insight, and I want you guys to just trust me on this one. People do shit that they would never, ever, ever do when they're scared. So when you see these news articles, when you see me play the piano, when you try stand-up, I encourage you all to try stand-up. Give it a shot and feel that wave of fear trying to pull who you are down. And the only way to get through it, there's no talent with it. There's no talent with it. It's experience. The more you do something, the more you can do it. And that's it. And cops need to do it. Comics need to do it. Piano players need to do it. And that's a good ending, I think, to this podcast. And basically, this one is about fear, and it's about overcoming it through repetition. Got to thank Audible again. I mean, you have no idea. I'm basically sponsored by one of my heroes. It's like they fucking gave me a mental renaissance in my brain. I am touring again, probably 2 weeks a month. I just got to perform for a bunch of the sports team owners, like the owner of the Orioles and the owner of all these. It was sports management conference in Chicago. It was like 40 just alpha males in like a diner, a dinner. And at first, they didn't give a shit about me. They're like rich and huge and commanding. And then, but by the end, I had them. And they were, and that's the thing is, they became the best crowd ever because a lot of those people, these like titans of industry, are that way because they love life. They love competition. They love teams. And by the end, we're all doing shots. Everything kept escalating. You know, there was like two women and 40 guys. You could smell the testosterone. And it was one of the most fun nights I've had in a while. You know, I'm talking to a Belgium banker about Flemish people, and he was just giggly as shit, rich, smart. I love that shit. And then I did the Chicago Improv, which is awesome. I love Chicago. This weekend, which you won't be able to go because this comes out next week, but I'm in San Diego. And then I just completed a show for the Esquire Network where I tried to find the best burger with my buddy JJ Johnson, who's amazing. Go check out his restaurant in Harlem. Google him. He's ridiculously talented. But go to my website, owenbenjamin.com. Subscribe to this podcast. Recommend it to meet people because that's the only way to spread this shit. And that's the only way I want to spread this shit. I don't want it to be rage porn on Facebook that gets 100,000 likes because they can't believe a dolphin got fingered by a Protestant. I don't even know. I'm just picking shit. I want this to be something that you recommend and say, listen to this. It's like you'll like it. You'll like this. So do that. And then I'm also have a YouTube show on the Sideshow Network called The Internet is Weird. You can YouTube that, subscribe to that, where I basically do healthy porn benders. I'm not like, sometimes I found I'd look at porn for hours, not because I'm perverted, but because, well, there really is no such thing as perverted, but because I just love categorizing and searching and researching. And it would be thrilling to find a new category or a new porn star. And then I realized that if I just substituted it for topics, I was becoming smarter and my dick worked better. So the rabbit hole stuff is basically like, I'll just look up vegans. And then by the end, I'm learning about breastfeeding pigeons and fucking the Pakistan economy. It's fantastic. So owenbenjamin.com, at Owen Benjamin on Twitter. I'm starting to do Periscope because I like it. I think it. You can't hide. It's live, so follow me on there. And that's it, guys. Spread the word. Love you. Thanks for letting me talk to you. Peace. you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.